Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 289 featuring Alex Yolov and Peter Matanov, our co-workers at our headquarters office in Sofia. Alex Yolov is our product specialist for V-Ray for Maya, and Peter Matanov is our product specialist for V-Ray for Max. Both great guys. I talk to them all the time because we're very focused on the new cool stuff that goes on in these products, and they're the guys who know the most about it. So we decided to do a podcast about it, especially since V-Ray 5 is hot and it's out right now. So if you guys are interested in V-Ray 5 for Max or Maya, just go to chaosgroup.com and check out all that information. But we got to discuss a few things. Kristen, did you pick up anything cool about this podcast?
It was very interesting. I listened to like it all and I retained it. And then can I repeat it? Probably not. But the one thing, like you said earlier, the users had a lot of input on this. And the one thing I thought was funny that people actually didn't want it to be simpler because, you know, the professionals are like, no, we get it. And so that was an interesting little point. I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. It's interesting. Well, it's interesting. Simpler is better, but some people think that if simpler means that they're not as important, if it's simpler, they want to have a complicated program. So we talk a lot about the defaults, right? Going back to defaults, and that's a big thing for us. Yeah. And the other thing we talk about is the light mixer, and there's some controversy over that, and we decided to cover that issue as well. It's really just it was a great conversation, honestly speaking. I think we really, you can see how much V-Ray is a product that is being driven by the community and what they want and what to make, you know, what drives them. So it's a really kind of a cool thing to do. This was a Vlado's request, by the way. Vlado said, you guys should do a podcast. You guys have been talking about V-Ray 5 for so long. It'd be really great to have a podcast about it and get everyone on board and find out what's happening. So Vlado listened to this and he really liked this episode. So hopefully you guys will like it as well. It was a lot of fun. Kristen, we do have a couple of cool events coming up. What's going on?
All right. So you can find these out at chaosgroup.com/events. The first one is, we've talked about a few times, a masterclass that's happening on August 28th, and it's going to be V-Ray 5 for 3DS Max. So it'll be fun. And then the big one is on September 2nd and 3rd, we are hosting a 24-hour event called 24 Hours of Chaos. So 60-plus speakers.
Hours. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's like a marathon, like a dance marathon, right? So it's going to be crazy. It's literally going to be around the world. I think it's starting in London. And so every time zone, it will start approximately at happy hour time around 7 o'clock-ish or something like that. And then so you can, after your work, you can relax, have a drink, and watch your time zone. Definitely going to be a lot of things that are happening interactively in your time zone. So definitely worth staying up for that and hanging out. Lon, Melissa, and I will be hosting the West Coast time zone, which is going to be from like 7 to 11 o'clock, quite late, but it'll be a lot of fun. We have, I think, overall, Kristen, how about like 60 speakers or something
like
that?
Yeah, like a little bit over, I think. Yeah, it's going to be a lot.
It's a lot of speakers. But it'll be a lot of fun. And so go check it out. To get all this information and find out all about the speakers and all the different time zones and all the different event, chaosgroup.com/24hours. And that's the number 24 and then hours. So just check it out. chaosgroup.com/24hours. Get all the information on the event. And I'm sure you can register to make sure all of you'll get all the news updates and all of that stuff. So it'll be a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I can't wait to have that happen. It's a lot of work, though. It's a lot of work to plan a 24-hour event around the globe, let me just tell you. So it's been a little bit stressful for us, but I'm very excited to have it happen. And a lot of the speakers, Kristen, they were supposed to be at Total Chaos, right?
Yeah, there's some of them. Mm-hmm. So they didn't get to present there, but we could hear them now. So it'll be really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm very excited about that. Okay, now, if people want to know more about the podcast, where can they go?
You can go to facebook.com/CG Garage or chaosgroup.com/CG Garage. I'm sorry, facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast.
Yay. I was like, wait a minute. Something sounds different this week. CG Garage Podcast. It's all right. And we also have, remember that we are recording these on video. So if you guys want to see the YouTube of this, just go to our YouTube channel, which is Chaos Group TV, and we post them all up there. And we also put it on our Facebook channel, like Kristen said, which is CG Garage Podcast on Facebook. You can check that out. And we have the video version of that as well. And if you have any more ideas that you'd like to give us or feedback on the podcast, labs@chaosgroup.com is where you can reach out to us. That being said, please enjoy this amazing podcast with Alex Yolov and Peter Matanov from our Chaos Group Sophia office.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
Lotto and I discussed this because he said we should really have Alex and Peter on to talk about V-Ray 5 and all the stuff that's gone on V-Ray 5. You guys have been in the trenches with V-Ray 5 for over a year, 2 years now? How long? A long time, right? You think about it.
I can't really put a date when we started working on that because it's not like...
You never really know when you say, okay, this is officially V-Ray 5, right?
Yep, you do. But when you start working, because the code is live all the time.
Right.
And it's not like that we wake up one morning and say, all right, all the code starting this morning is going to be V-Ray 5. It's not really like that.
Right. Right. But it's been a big change in V-Ray 5. What would you say if we try to give an overall picture, like say, what's the philosophy behind V-Ray 5? What makes V-Ray 5? What's the motivation behind that in terms of what it's doing?
Well, it of course started as something that we always try to achieve, to listen to the users,
right?
And actually, for your previous question about the date, I actually kind of have a date because almost a year ago, actually exactly a year ago, I had this flying list of features, and we were together with Vlado at the IKEA Tech Days or something like that. They have this thing happening every year. I ask him, Vlado, can you please look at this list and see which of those things can happen for V-Ray 5, because we want it to happen this year.
Yeah.
And actually, with this list and finding what is going to happen and if it's going to happen, we started the actual real work for V-Ray 5. But the actual list of all those features that were gathered from the wish lists in the forum, with talking with clients, live visits, was done maybe like 2 years.
2 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but this is in terms of what's motivating V-Ray 5, right? In terms of what are the things going on, right? So what were some of the things that motivated it in terms of like when you talk to clients, what were some of the things that they wanted?
I guess they want to do their job easier and faster. Each of them have their different workflow, but it was our task to cross all their workflows and make something universal from our side. And it was not very easy because, like, as you know, we are trying to help a lot of different industries at the same time with one product, like VFX, ArcVis, product design, automotive, and we just wanted to make something really universal, so we really listened to all their requests, and try to eliminate all their problems one by one. Like one of those things was that they had to go to different third-party plugins for some of the things, which is of course fine, but for the simple things, we had to, because it's a third-party plugin, and for example in Max, if you write your plugin by the book and by the rules of 3ds Max, it should be supported right away in V-Ray, in the plain regular V-Ray CPU. But right. For V-Ray standalone, which means supporting in Chaos Cloud and in V-Ray GPU, we had to rewrite those third-party plugins from scratch.
Right.
So, yeah.
Can you give an example?
I don't want to mention
okay.
plugin names, yeah. But it was really important because, for example, if we rewrite the plugin A, and it works in V-Ray GPU, but 2 months later, the software developer that makes it made some changes. We have to do it on our side, and maybe it's not very near to a V-Ray release, and it's like...
So basically, you had to not just support V-Ray, but you had to support... not support Max, but you had to support all the plugins that people are using.
Yeah.
And that's a pain.
Yeah. It's a Max thing. Like, it's very friendly for plugins, so there are a lot of plugins.
Right. Right. And there's a lot of legacy, too. There's a lot of legacy that's going on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's tough. There is... the thing that I notice, this is true in both V-Ray for Max and V-Ray for Maya, but I almost think it's a little bit more in Max a little bit, is it's all about trying to make things just simpler. Like, to get from A to B, you have to do far less steps, right? And you just have it done, right? You're like, you got all the material presets now, you've got all of that stuff, so that... And a lot of people were saying, it's like, oh, well, this is for amateurs who don't know about V-Ray. And I'm like, no, I've used V-Ray for 20 years, and I could use something that gets me to get plastic in one step as opposed to seven steps, you know? So I think it's important for people to realize, like, this is the simplicity of getting from A to B means that you can do your job faster, right?
Yeah, and actually there are two kinds of people I'm judging by the threads in the forum. Like, most of them are appreciating, the long-time users, the experts in V-Ray are appreciating all those goodies that we added, that you can do your things faster. And there is the other half that screams, please don't make V-Ray simpler. Like, it's a tool for professionals. But I think in the end we've achieved, like, pleasing both parties. Because even if you're a professional, you can still use our presets or whatever to begin your work, and then no one is stopping you from doing things advanced.
Just to add to what Peter said, if we're simplifying in one area and people feel like we're taking control out of their hands, we're actually giving you more control in other areas. And wherever we've made simplifications, like there's a checkbox you no longer see, it's based both on user feedback and on really well thought out decisions on our end to make sure that we don't hide away something that's really needed, but at the same time, we make sure that stuff that get in the way of people's workflow and their day-to-day work is what we automate under the hood and let V-Ray handle it by itself.
Right.
And that's what gets simplified.
But that's the been an issue, right? We've created more and more. I mean, over 20 years, right? More and more user requests out there, and then more and more and more settings, and you know, a lot of them are no longer going to be relevant. And so we have to remove those because they are no longer relevant, or people, you know, just need to stop using them because it's just messing it up. That's the thing that's happened since V-Ray 3.
Yep.
It's gotten, we've automated a lot of things that people used to manually tweak. Am I right?
Yep.
So,
and it was very like, when we make decisions like that, it's not like we decide to remove a checkbox in the last minute and push a new version out and here it is. Like I said, it's considering the feedback that we get from users. It's doing tests on our own, because if it's not an algorithm that V-Ray can run and decide something for itself, it needs to be some other default value that works for a very large number of cases, and then that's where we just sit down, test a bunch of different scenes, and then try to come up with a default value that works for all or almost all cases. And after we do that, we contact users again, give them builds to play with, let them spend some time, and then see if what we did was for the better or worse.
Right. I mean, that's like a normal beta.
Yeah. Right? So it's a really a back and forth thing going on between us and users. And it's not something that we decide first thing when we wake up in the morning, I'm going to hide this checkbox away. Nobody's going to use it anymore.
It's
not really like that.
No. And I think that, you know, the variables and the features were so the settings diet that we're going to continue to be on, I think, right? So that would be a good thing. It's interesting, you know, honestly speaking, and I'm not trying to disparage you, but I have actually heard some people that get upset about the settings going away because they feel that that's their job, is to know what that setting means. And it's not, honestly, that shouldn't be your job. Your job should be, that's our job.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It's our job to know what the setting is. And I think that we know better than anyone how to make sure that that setting is as fast as possible across as many things as possible.
Yeah, and usually I know that people will disagree because they, what I'm going to say next might be that when they people hear it, they might think of something else other than the example that I have in my head. But for example, the controls over whether or not to use Embry, all those controls of how V-Ray collects and holds the data in its own internal structures and so on. Mm-hmm. It's a place where we've taken away control from the user, but it was for a good reason. And that was that people, we had feedback that people were often getting into trouble trying to play with those settings and come up with a good combo of different values to get V-Ray to perform better or something else, ending up actually either achieving the goal, but at the expense of weeks of tweaking, which shouldn't be the case, or didn't come up with a better result by playing with those settings.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. I was working at a company many, many, many years ago. And I walked in having, you know, used V-Ray for a long time. And then they were starting on this big movie. And they had the presets for that someone had set up for the movie. And I was like, here are the presets for. And they're like, every single variable was changed. Every single one. Like by whatever amount of whatever, including the BSP tree, everything. Everything was changed. And I was like, why? And they were like, well, this is what this person said. You know, he's an expert in V-Ray and he changed all these settings. I was like, okay, I'm going to do an experiment. And I changed them all back to default and it worked twice as fast. I'm like, there's no reason to like, you know, do that. And I think that people don't, they think that default means bad, but I think default means faster than what you're going to try to come up with.
Yeah, the defaults aren't just the noise threshold for the image sampler. The defaults are a very large number of settings you V-Ray has, yeah.
Probably shouldn't be messing with.
Yeah.
And, sorry, Alex.
Go ahead, Alex.
Behind all those values, the default values, are standing like countless hours of testing and rendering, and they were not done by, I don't know, some random guy, but most of them are done by Vlado. So those values mean something, and if you really don't know what they're doing and you're not sure what is going to come up, don't chase them.
Right.
Yeah, and for just sure. To top up with another example, there's a few more settings that I personally wanted to change their defaults because they are causing trouble more often than they help. But we didn't do it for V-Ray 5 just because we didn't have enough time to sit down and test enough scenes and test different values to know what the new value should be.
Right.
Yeah, so it's... Like I said, it's something that lives, it evolves.
I keep trying to tell, I'm just going to keep trying to put that message out there because it happens so much still to this day. Like, use the defaults, use them, because they're not just there because that's a place to start. They're there because they actually make things that is the optimal setting for 99% of your scene. And if you think you're in the 1% that's not there, it's only about, you know, a 1% chance that that's true.
Yeah, ideally, a renderer should be instructed how much noise to allow in the image to you know, fit within a time budget.
Yep.
And that should pretty much be it.
Well, here's another thing that V-Ray does that it's very important for people to know is like our light cache pass, right, actually does more than a light cache. It actually does an analysis of your scene and figures out what's going on in your scene and adjusts itself for the rendering portion to take into account. Like, for example, the
active lights.
Adaptive
lights and the adaptive dome light. Yep.
All of that's pre-calculated. It's like, okay, I'm figuring out the optimal settings based on what I have analyzed in your scene. So it's a very important part of that process. So those are things that you can't mess with, but use this. If you have to go in there and mess with every light and figure out the subdivision of every light or whatever, that's just...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That all of this is completely automated.
Yeah, but it took a long time to convince our artists that messing with the subdivision of every material and messing with the subdivision of every light was actually a negative impact on your time.
I didn't know. In theory, it may help in a few cases where that's probably the easiest way to achieve a certain goal. But there's a good chance you spend so much time trying to figure out all the correct values for everything in the scene that it's not really worth it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. For sure.
I have a fresh story related to this. Like you all seen the videos that we made for the V-Ray 5 launch. So that interior for the V-Ray 5 for Max with the chair and that spaceship. So I often check the scenes that are made by our 3D department. Some of you may don't know, but we have a 3D department that they do all those scenes for the marketing videos. So like those are artists that know V-Ray inside out and they really know what they're doing. So the interior scene that they sent me, I just wanted to check something in it, and when I opened the render settings, they were all defaults. And like maybe it was the first or the second time I'm seeing this, and seeing that really tells me something, that we really achieved the best default settings.
It's like it made you so happy you could cry.
Yeah. Yeah, I just opened it over and over again to check if they're really the defaults, and they were.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. I think it's a good thing that we do that. So I just want to make sure that, you know, we keep hammering on that default thing, because I every now and then it comes up, you know, it comes up and I feel like I've written several blog posts about using the defaults, and now I feel like I almost feel like I have to do it again and again because it still comes up every now and then, and it just frustrates me. But I think people are starting to get it. I think I'm starting to see people say, yeah, the defaults are actually much faster if you just stick with them. There are things that the artists have control of, or should have control of, like where the lights go and how shiny a material is, or where the camera is, or depth of field, or any of those other things. So those are the artistic values that the artist should focus on. But focusing on whether they should use Embry or not use Embry is not something that they should be worrying about, right?
Yeah, and I know that we simplified a lot more than just the Embry settings, but I'll need to backtrack a bit here, because we launched Purify for Max and Maya, and there was public beta programs for both that lasted for, I don't know how much, a month or two for each, or maybe a bit more, maybe a bit less. So roughly a couple of months. And I heard some feedback that people probably thought that the beta was unusually short this time. But it actually wasn't. That was only the public part of the beta program that's open to everybody. But for a few months before that, we were in private beta, and so each of those products has been thoroughly tested for a lot more than a couple of months by users. And even in the private beta, we had for Maya specifically, we had people actually running productions with a beta build, which is bold, because it was a really early beta. But even in that private beta, where we had already simplified a lot of things in the interface, we got feedback from users who are big VFX studios, and they were actually really positive about allowing themselves and the artists to actually spend time working on the scene and not playing with how much subdivs you added on this material. Wait, now it's divided by the max subdivs of the sampler. Yeah. So this much. Oh, no, it doesn't. So, yeah, it was actually a battle-proven decision, and we got feedback that it works, and it's a decision for the better.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right, and you're right. I was on that private beta as well, so I know how much there was a lot of emails for months going back and forth on that feedback. Mm-hmm. So that was a very, very good thing, Peter. All right, I want to talk to you a little bit about the VFB, because I remember seeing we have been working on that the new frame buffer for years. I want to say several years it's been in development and thinking about what it is and thinking about how it's going to look and optimizing it and thinking about its features and stuff. But it's a big change, because that, to be honest, for a lot of people, that is the V-Ray interface. That's where you see your rendering. So talk a little bit about the frame buffer and tell me a little bit about, you know, let's first give an overview of what's changed and then the philosophy behind it.
So what changed? Like, everything. it's a absolutely written from scratch frame buffer, and as we already mentioned a million times, the motto behind V-Ray 5 is more than a renderer, which means that we want to keep users playing in V-Ray without switching different applications and finishing their jobs in one place. So, of course, we can't do a whole new, I don't want to say application names. Professional.
Yeah, we're not
software.
Reinventing the composite software.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But for the most of the basic tasks and for most of what people do after they finish their render, we wanted to make them stay in V-Ray and feel comfortable and just do it in one place. So the light mix was a feature that everybody wanted from our colleagues from Prague. And of course, we did it a little differently than the one in Corona. Everything is happening automatically. You don't have to populate the light selects manually. But after that is pretty much the same, which of course it's a huge benefit for people that just want to tweak lights and don't want to render again.
Right.
And the other, and maybe the most important thing for me, is mm-hmm. the layer compositing inside of VFB. For now, it's pretty basic, like you can do corrections on separate layers, but for the future we are planning to add masking.
Oh.
So once we
emphasis on planning.
Yeah. Once we do it, I think it will become even more powerful.
Right.
So back on what you said, like we've released some screenshots like years ago, and people were thinking that we have this and we're holding it and like we're saving it for a future version on purpose, mm-hmm. which is exactly not true.
Mm-hmm.
Because those screenshots they have nothing in common with the thing we have now.
Right. The idea was there, though.
Yeah. And we use the core, like the backbone of the VFB, but everything you're seeing now in Max and Maya started in, like, I don't know, maybe 10 months ago.
Mm.
So the whole interface, the whole connections between the interface and the core, all the decisions that we had to make, how this should work and how where everything should be, started 10 months ago. And
yeah.
I believe for something that is very close to a whole new software, it's really amazing that we did it for such a short period.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's some very big things that we did in the frame buffer. Obviously, the light mix is a big one. A lot of people say, oh, you just stole that from Corona. I was like, well, yeah, we
I was going
we own Corona.
Yeah.
But you know what? I don't care what those people say, because the fact is that there's a lot of people out there that want to be competitive about their different renderers, and it just doesn't make any sense. The light mix is a great idea, and it's been around for as an idea for a while. We needed to incorporate something, and the opportunity to put it into our brand new frame buffer was really big, right? And so our frame buffer was there; it was ready to go. We've been thinking about the layers idea for a while. This is a perfect place for us to fit in the light mix, and I think we did a great job. I think what Peter, you mentioned it before, like, we have a way that it automatically picks the lights for you or groups them for you, and you can make that all in a nice little setting. So it actually works out really well. I think that the light mix is in a really good spot, and it's useful for everyone. So I don't know why everyone's complaining about, you know, it was used in another package before that, but I think it's really great. I do want to talk a little bit about the fact that you said, you know, we don't want people to go to another package. The fact is, there's a lot of things that our users do that they've done their rendering and they just want to do a very slight color correction on, a little bit of a curve edit, a little bit of a contrast. Maybe we have our new, and I want, you know, Peter, you can talk about it for a second, but the, our tone, basically our new kind of tone mapping thing that we do, our filmic look, those are great. And if you can do it all in that frame buffer and then save it out, and then you don't have to open it up in another package to do more color corrections, then why would you? That's great, right? So I think it's a really cool thing. Talk a little bit about the tone mapping, because that's I don't know whichever one of you wants to talk about it, but that stuff is pretty cool. And I don't usually like tone mapping, but this is awesome.
I just want to say a few words because people are really saying that we stole the Latniks, which is actually not exactly true, because Latmix is based on Light Selects, and we had Light Selects for years. Yeah. Like, all those things that you can do was possible like 3 years ago, but we just...
So basically, even if we added, if we simply added the compositing part in the VFB, that would have been there for free.
Right. Yeah. And we just made an interface for example, for the Latmix. Like, the compositing thing is more advanced, but with a few extra steps, you could do it even in V-Ray Nix or V-Ray, but right, not inside the VFB.
I'll explain it this way. Light Selects were around forever, right? And then so 10 years maybe? Long time, right? Yeah. And we've used Light Selects in, I was using Light Selects in production all the time. And then we would take all our Light Selects, put them into Nuke, and it would be a light mix in Nuke, right? So by adding a compositing component to the frame buffer, it enabled us to quickly and easily add a Light Selects feature that's built into the frame buffer. So it's nothing. So it's been around for 10 years. It's just we've added an interface to it.
Well, to be honest, the light mix feature on itself is a lot more complicated than that, because
it is.
But the
concept of it is like it comes in because we already had Light Selects, and now we have the compositor and we put them together. Now we've done more things to it, as you mentioned before. We've added the ability. So if you really tweak your Light Selects too much to the fact that you see artifacts from the Light Selects, you can hit a button that takes all your settings and puts it back into the renderer, and then you get a nice clean render out of that. So that's kind of a really nice feature too. Which is a really good thing, I think, in general. I think Light Selects and the frame buffer are a huge, huge benefit of V-Ray 5. And I think that that's going to be sort of driving a lot of it. I also think, you know, generally it has a nice new fresh look. The buttons are clearer. Like, it's just like, I just know what's going on a little better. So it's cleaner, and it's more, you know, it's a more contemporary design to a frame buffer. And I think that's a really nice thing.
And it's again, one of those things that are alive. So they will keep evolving, and we will make changes and improvements wherever it makes sense. So it's not something that we've, you know, put a label on it that it's done and that's it.
Right.
But it's funny now I just remembered when Peter said, when we started working on the new frame buffer, and I just remembered a funny story, because when we started actually writing code for it, it took months before something was actually usable. So we can, you know, start testing it and see how it behaves and so on. So the first few months was just developers writing code, and there was nothing for us to touch.
Right.
Yeah, and then there were a few months where there was already something that you can touch and play with and see how it behaves and make decisions based on that, or reevaluate the decisions, the design decisions that you made in the past. Mm-hmm. But it still looked like a scaffolding, you know.
Right.
It wasn't prettified. So that's usually the last phase that writing. Making something new and then writing code goes through. So
yeah, you don't want to design a whole beautiful button that then doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly.
So you just make something that says button.
There was a whole separate thing that was going at the same time with another department who were working on the actual design of it. But the two came together, the code and the looks. Came together at a later stage, and it was really fun to see something that you just know in the back of your mind that once it's done, you just have to, you know, keep seeing it in your mind because you know how the design will look, but it's not already there, but you can play with it and it does something. It just doesn't look nice yet. And then when you finally add all the style sheets and the icons and everything to the interface, and it comes together, and it's like really gratifying. You know, you see it come to completion.
When you set style sheets, actually we've used the Lavina style sheets with Lavina scrolls and sliders and everything, and it worked very well, I think. Right. So yeah, and it feels really like we're going in one direction with our UI things.
Right. Well, I think it's really cool, and I think again it's just another example of when V-Ray 5 is, it's allowing people to get to where they want to go to faster, right? You can just put your lights in roughly in terms of the intensity of the lights, right? Not necessarily location, but in terms of intensity and the color, and then you can go to the light mix and really balance your lighting out, because it's much better that way, right? So it makes a big difference.
And there was already feedback that when you do light mixing in the new VFB, you can control the color, but you cannot choose a temperature for the light color.
Oh, right.
And it's something that, yeah, we do have it in mind. We are actually doing research right now to allow for this. It wasn't ready when everything else was ready for the release. And we can't really keep it to ourselves until everything is done, because it's never going to get done. We're never gonna get everything done at the same time,
right?
Yeah, but we're there's an ongoing research, and hopefully in the near future we will have even more goodies to add there.
Oh well, yes, I think you're right. I mean, the new VFB is to start adding a whole set of features. Right now that you have basically a compositing. The beginnings of compositing inside of the frame buffer, that's just going to open up the door to a lot more ideas of what's possible in the future, for sure. Okay, Alex, I do want to talk about a little bit about, just take a little side detour. We talked about things getting much simpler, right? And just saying, oh, let's simplify everything. But then we added something crazy, such as the light path expressions, which for those who really want to dabble in some crazy ideas, let's explain what a light path expression is as easily as you can, because it's a complicated process.
So it's complicated enough, so it's to the point where it might be complicated to explain. So it might not be the best explanation that I can give.
Okay.
But since I have already been asked this a couple of times, and I think this explanation works. So when you render an image, you get your beauty pass. That's what you see as a final result. But there's a number of other additional channels that you can add that get rendered together with the final image. And that, like all the render elements that V-Ray comes with, and you can use them and do all sorts of things in compositing. But the list of render elements that V-Ray comes with is a predefined number, and they do exactly what each channel is built to do. And with light path expression, you can basically build your own custom lighting render elements for compositing. So you can throw in practically anything you can think of.
Well, right. So if you take a rendering, a beauty rendering, like you mentioned, it's made up of lots of different parts of light, right? So it's made up of reflections. It's made up of diffuse lighting. It's made up of global illumination. It's made up of all kinds of different lights. And those are all added together to create the beauty paths, right? Mm-hmm. And so, as you mentioned, we have render elements of GI, render elements of reflection, specular, blah, 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 right? With light path expressions, you can get way more granular. You can say, I would like the second global illumination bounce from this object only.
Yep. For example, especially if you're using brute force GI, where it can specify the number of bounces that the GI engine does, you can even break down each of the bounces separately and add them together, or get each separate bounce for each separate object or for each separate light, and so on. Right. So the combinations are practically endless.
Right.
You can do really crazy stuff in compositing.
So the problem is that you basically have one render element that can do everything. So in order for you to figure out what you want, we created a basically a very simplified script language that allows you to tell that the light path expression what part of it you were interested in seeing, right? And that's kind of cool. So in order to make that work, we actually gave a bunch of presets that are examples that you say, okay, let's say you want this. This is what the path expression is. And so you can start to learn from that preset. But then we went one step further, which is pretty cool. We made a website that allows you to do it yourself. Explain how that website worked.
LP builder. So LP stands for light path expressions. And then there's a builder tool. It's a visual tool. It practically gives you a visual representation of what an expression looks like, and you can use it to, just like adding nodes to a graph, to add symbols. Where, let's take it from there. An expression is a string of symbols, and each symbol defines some specific information from the scene that you want to capture in the channel, in the expression, and so basically. It's a visual thing where you can place different nodes in a graph, and each node is you can pull from a list of available symbols that capture different types of information, and you can build an expression visually. Or you can do it the other way around, just like you do it in the interface of Max and Maya. Just go with a preset, and the preset gives you a visual representation of sort of the way V-Ray sees the expression for itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now, this is not necessarily something, I mean, it's really cool, but it's not necessarily something people need to worry about every day.
Yeah, of course not. And it's also something that it's, let's call it an initial version, because we did it at the last moment, more or less. And it's something that we'll keep developing because we put some effort to make it work and make it work well. But we have other ideas of how to make it even easier to use, let's call it. So there's a lot more that we can do that we'll keep doing.
Right. That's cool. All right. Because I'm just fresh off writing this blog post and it's almost done. Let's talk a little bit about ACES and how we incorporated ACES. So ACES CG is a color space that we have incorporated inside of V-Ray. But let's talk a little bit about the history of ACES. Tell us a little bit about why that color space exists.
Where to begin? I don't know if you've ever talked about how the blog posts come together.
Okay.
So on this particular example, it's there's a few more people helping in with ideas, verifying the content and giving hints to make improvements on the blog. Chris is working on that. I'm helping. We have some of the developers helping too. So we make sure that whatever goes there holds true. So ACES. I guess most people know what it stands for, and it's a way to encode color.
Right. Well,
but it comes from
ACES. Not everyone knows what ACES is, but I think a lot of people who use V-Ray know what sRGB is.
Okay.
Right. So sRGB, ACES is just another color space like sRGB in its in its simplest way possible that you can think about it, right? So, but sRGB has limitations, right?
Well, I guess like any other encoding system. So, because there's a bunch of colors that the human eye can see, but there's a subset of those colors that you can capture on film, for example, and there's a subset of those colors that you can project on a screen or on television and so on. And as technologies change over time and over decades, the needs to be able to capture and store color information and reproduce it on another media also change and evolve and get better over time. So Oasis is just one of those, let's call it color space, that holds a certain amount of information. And it was originally developed for film, right? For cameras.
Well, not for film, but for digital cameras.
Exactly.
Film, right, because digital cameras suddenly had more colors they could represent than film.
Yeah.
So the problem was that then all of a sudden you have, especially in the movie industry, you had a lot of cameras out there, like the Arri Alexa and the Red camera and all these other cameras out there that could represent a huge amount of colors. But there was no standard to represent all those new colors. So they all had their own raw formats, and those raw formats were all different. So
it's like a standard, a new standard that rolls.
They needed a standard to get all of these cameras in the same color space. And so they came up with ACES, and that was developed by the Academy appropriately, because the Academy wants all their movies done that way. Now, the thing is, this color space is not just for these cameras. It's also for how things are projected, and it's also for how things look on your brand new HDR TV with Dolby surround sound and all that other stuff, right? You need to have something that looks consistent and good. And you don't want, you know, Panasonic or Sony to basically invent a camera color space. You want it to be the way it was represented correctly. At least I do. I know some people don't like that. But so ACES was invented that way. So it's a new color space. The thing that differentiates itself from sRGB or the other Rec 709 or anything else is that it has a much wider gamut. So I mean, it can represent much more colors, and it can also represent much a greater range of depth of colors, meaning the intensities of colors. And that's basically it, right? But now every movie that's being done out there, they want to be able to the people to work, like the production lines, like you have to work in ACES color space. So that means that the colors that are coming out of CG have to match that ACES color space. Yep. So they invented, unfortunately, to make things just a little bit more complicated, they created several versions of ACES. Some of them are logarithmic and some of them are linear. So for CG, it always works better for them to be linear. So they called the ACES CG is the linear version of ACES color space. That's the best explanation I can think of why this is around. A lot of people have trouble with ACES, but let me just tell you, we're trying to just keep that out of like the less complicated part as much as possible. And really all we're doing is explain how we manage it a little bit, because we don't do that much. We just make it very simple for people, right?
So Fury now is able to work within that color space system and render the image working with the colors defined in that color space. So the whole setup now is just a flip of a switch. That's all it takes.
Yeah. Right.
You just see a new option under color mapping, and you can choose whether you want to use ACES or use linear sRGB.
Right.
Or ideally, let Maya decide and use the Maya color management system.
Right.
And
because Maya has its own color management system.
Yeah. Exactly. Which is pretty advanced, actually. Maya has a pretty advanced color management system.
So we read that color management system and we adapt ourselves to manage it, to be managed through that system as well, which is good. Yeah. Okay, that's
also
good.
There's always been a way in V-Ray to use custom OCIO, Open Color IO configurations to do that. It's a bit more complicated, but that's been around for a very long time. Now this is built in directly built into V-Ray.
Okay. So we don't have to worry about Open Color IO to manage our.
Yeah, I guess most VFX people will in big large VFX pipelines will keep using it, the OCIO configs. But for all intents and purposes, there's also the switch too. You can decide not to use it and just use a switch for this.
Okay. All right. There is actually a lot more stuff that we can cover on V-Ray 5, which I'm sure you guys can go to check out our forums. I just wanted to give people a good idea of some of the ideas of what's going on. The frame buffer to me was the thing that jumped out the most in terms of something that looked different and interacted with V-Ray differently. Peter, why don't you tell us what you sort of hinted at the fact that there's going to be more improvements or more things, or we're going to borrow from more things. Why don't you tell people where you think we're going to go from here? Like, what are some of the things you mentioned? The frame buffer is going to continue to evolve, or things of like that nature. What other things do you think?
Like I said, we will start with masking, but the good thing here is that the way that we coded the core is making possibilities. Actually, we can do everything. So we'll listen to the users. We will follow the trends because everything is changing. Like, maybe we had plans a year ago for some features of the VFB, but like, industry is changing. The user needs are changing. So we'll follow whatever they want. But in the near future, as I said, we want to make masking easy, and so people can do it in a few clicks and get what they want.
Okay.
But the foundation is really good here, because in the old VFB, it was a very old thing, and we were limited with. How to put it? Like, we're not with our hands tied, but everything tied.
Right.
Yeah. So the foundation of the VFB2 is really good with the new VFB. So
future proof.
Future
proof. Right.
Yeah.
Well, good. And what about you, Alex? What are some of your thoughts on where the future of V-Ray 5 is going, some of the things that people are thinking about?
Well, one of the things we did for V-Ray 5 exclusively for Maya was to completely redesign the V-Ray proxy. That's the system that allows you to offload geometry to disk and load it on demand. And the original proxy that was in Maya was, I don't know how many years old, but it was pretty old, and there were new and evolving needs that it didn't do a good job meeting. And people were starting to develop all sorts of crazy workarounds to make it work faster in the Maya session, and then do all sorts of really crazy scripts in their pipeline to make it work the way it should. And that's another place where we really listened to the users and then decided to completely revamp it. So now it's really fast to load in the scenes. It's faster to render, allows to do overrides of materials and visibility a lot more easily, and so on and so on.
Just the fact that it supports hierarchies is a big difference.
Yeah, you can actually see the hierarchy of the contents. Before that, it was just one long list. And if the file contains too many objects, you can get lost in this very long list. But we also noted that people use V-Ray scenes extensively as objects that you bring in. For people who don't know, you can actually export your entire Max or Maya scene off to a file called the V-Ray scene file. You can use V-Ray standalone to render it directly, or you can bring it back in Max and Maya, or even exchange it between applications, and it can hold all information about not only geometry, but all the materials, textures, lights, animation, and so on. And it's a really convenient way to reuse or bake out and reuse complete assets with everything.
It's also a really good way to get things into Lavina.
And a really good way to get things into Lavina.
It's actually the only way to get things in Lavina. Yeah. But it is a good thing to do, because so our V-Ray scene files are becoming very, very important, much more important. Yeah.
And that's another area where we want to give a significant boost to the workflow. We really wanted to do it for V-Ray 5, but there just wasn't enough time. So it's an area where we'll focus some efforts in the future. especially because just like with the proxy, when you import a V-Ray scene as an object in Maya, there's a bunch of things you can override once the file is imported. You can change materials, you can turn, for example, you can turn off all the lights, but you cannot do all the lights individually and so on. There's a bunch of stuff you can override, but it can be made a lot more easier. Mm-hmm. For example, for the new proxy, we reused Maya's GPU cache. Maya has a thing called GPU cache where you can read in Alembic files and they draw really quickly using the GPU in the viewport. And we reuse that system for the new proxy. We want to see if we can reuse it for the V-Ray scenes. So V-Ray scenes load and load faster in the scene. And Maya stays responsive with enormous scenes. We want to make the overrides a lot more easier to work with and so on. So we have a lot of idea based on user feedback. That's another area where we want to improve things. So we're not simply adding new features to the mix to give people more and more things. We're also not forgetting about older features that people still use, and people know that there's room for improvement, and we also know that. So that's another thing we want to work on. And also there's everybody's favorite USD format.
Yes.
That's also something we're working on.
Yeah.
In a few different ways for V-Ray. We have no idea when we're going to have something that we can show to people. Mm-hmm. But it's something we're also working on.
Well, I think because we're like this,
Peter said, industries change, new formats become standard and so on. And so we need to adapt.
Yeah. Well, the thing is also about USD, right? Everyone says USD, USD, are you just going to support USD? And this is the thing I was remember hearing at SIGGRAPH last year. Are you going to support USD? And it's like, are you using USD? No. Right? Because they want that feature, right? So the problem is it's a cat and mouse game, right? They're going to use USD once things support USD, but if they don't use USD, we don't know how to use it. So we've been sort of slowly making progress, and now it's actually getting more and more. And it looks like USD is actually becoming much more of a big thing in the industry right now. I think people are really taking it very seriously in terms of what it's capable of doing. So that's great. I mean, I think USD is going to be very important as we move forward. So we're looking into it as and how the best way to support it. But you know, we've supported so many standards over the years, so many different material standards and geometry standards
and
everything.
Volumetric caches with OpenVDB and so on.
And color standards, OpenColor.io. We've done all of
I'm sure that people would have wanted V-Ray 5 to come out with USD support, but we would have wanted it too. As usual, there's never enough time for everything. It took us a while to realize what the best approach is to start implementing support for it. We already are beyond this part and are already working on an implementation. We're also in touch with other companies, including Autodesk, to work together with them on implementing it in the different Autodesk softwares and so on. So we're doing what we feel we can do at this point to gather all the information that we need in order to implement it in the best way possible.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, guys. I'm sorry we started a little late this morning, but or for you guys in the evening. it was good to talk to you guys. And there's still a lot more that's going on in V-Ray 5. And it's always good to hear from Peter and Alex about, you know, their point of view, because they are the product experts for sure in terms of what's going on in terms of their user base. They listen to their users more than anyone in the company. So they really have a very close relationship with both the users and the developers to get the best products out there for everyone. So remember that when every time you make some crazy request inside of Max or Maya, it's it's going to come from Alex or Peter. It's going to have to go through them. And they're really good at, they're really good at figuring out what's possible. I just want to say thank you guys so much for doing this. And hopefully, you guys can come back, soon when we have, another big, news on either one of these products.
Sure. Anytime.
Thanks, guys.
All right, and eventually actually do it in person in the actual booth at the actual
That would be garage. Nice. Yeah. That would be nice. But I don't know the next time I'm getting on an airplane, but we'll see. We'll see. We will see.